Greetings, and welcome to Not Nuff Said, an MCM production. This is a new spin-off series from the Marvel Champions monthly main feed, where we're going to talk about the lore behind the cards in Marvel Champions the Card Game. We're going to record about two issues a month, so the first issue here will be about recent books we've been reading and books we've enjoyed. If you're a card gamer going into a comic shop, you want to pick up a fun story, pick one of these up and discuss it with us on Discord or many other social media platforms. The second episode each month will focus on a specific encounter set or modular set, and maybe even a hero, and the lore behind those cards. So I'll read a couple stories related to a certain character or modular set and talk through how that relates to the game Marvel Champions. So, I am Kennedy Hawk, aka Dan, from the Marvel Champions Monthly team, and I have with me Shane, aka Addercop. How's it going, Shane?
It's going pretty well. I get to talk about comics in the middle of a nice California afternoon.
Staying safe from all the fires and natural disasters, hopefully.
Yeah, far enough to be safe.
So why don't you give the listeners some of your history with Marvel Comics and comic book reading?
Sure. So I grew up with comics. As a kid, I was immediately attracted, as soon as I could read, to stuff like Spider-Man. I liked characters with big, cool powers. Thinking of Spider-Man webbing up the villain and hanging him up. And as I got older and stuff, I started to appreciate more like symbolic stuff. And in that case, I got really attracted to Captain America. Since I was like maybe 12 or 13, I'd borrow books from the from friends or from the library and just keep consuming more and more. And as it naturally goes, you just keep expanding. So in this case, you know, almost 20 years later, I've read a lot of Marvel comics, and something about it just keeps me coming back.
Just a few too many, eh? Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier today, and I realized I started reading Marvel and collecting Marvel in 91, mm-hmm. So it's almost been 30 years of Marvel comic books for me, which is kind of crazy. Very similar story, though. I started reading them as a kid. I was instantly hooked. I've collected a couple and read a couple DC comics along the ways and a lot of indie stuff, but something always brings me back to Marvel, which is probably why I play and talk about a card game based in the Marvel universe. Just maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, like, as kids, it's easy for us to consume Marvel content, like the X-Men TV show, the Spider-Man TV show, all the different iterations of either of those TV shows. So it seems like a natural progression to, once we have the expendable income, to really take part in it actively. And that's where we're at now, recording, talking about our hobby.
So today's first episode, we are going to talk about some Empire tie-ins. So let's briefly recap what Empire is. So Empire is a 2020 comic book storyline put out by Marvel Comics. It's the big summer crossover for the Marvel Universe. Mainly a team-up slash crossover between the Avengers and the Fantastic Four, but with some dabbling of other heroes and hero teams in there as well. So let me read the premise from Marvel's website. The Avengers and the Fantastic Four and various other heroes of the Marvel Universe come together to fight and prevent the incoming invasion of the Kree-Skrull Armada, being led by Hulkling, who is now crowned King Doruk the Eighth. Very interesting that that is the synopsis, because that's not actually what happens. So we're going to do a real brief recap of what happened in the main title Empire, and then we're going to focus most of our discussion on two tie-ins. So Empire is a six-issue story. The first issue has the Fantastic Four and Avengers kind of divided. The Fantastic Four come on to a Kree-Skrull alliance led by Hulkling, and they have allied themselves to take on another alien race called the Kotati. At the same time, the Avengers stumble upon the Kotati on this garden paradise they've created on the moon due to some dreams that were implanted into Tony Stark's brain, saying that people on the moon needed help. The Avengers decide they're going to help defend the Kotati from this Kree-Skrull alliance because they get told this sob story, which is kind of sad, about how the Krees and Skrulls have betrayed them in the past and tried to wipe out all of the Kotati. So the Kotati are like these plant people. So the name of this episode is Eat Your Veggies, because, spoiler alert, the plant people are not the good guys. So if you have not read Empire yet, you might want to tune out. Thanks for listening. Great show. Glad you came along. But if you have read Empire and want to discuss it with us, continue further.
And thanks for listening.
So, like I said, the first issue, Avengers with the Kotati, Fantastic Four with the Krees and Skrulls. The Kree Skrulls come to the moon to try to wipe out the Kotati. The Avengers help them, and basically they win the war right there. They send out this giant plant seed bomb into space. It explodes and like plants like envelope all of the Kree Skrull fleet. There's like vines growing out of their ears and their nostrils and all sorts of things. You get this nice panel shot of the Thing and Mr. Fantastic just enveloped in vines because they've been killed by the Kotati. Issue 1, two main characters in the Marvel Universe dead. You can imagine that's going to last for a very long time. The Kotati then give this giant villainous monologue about how they're here for revenge and avenge, and that's why they recruited the Avengers to help them, and they offer the Avengers a place in paradise after they rid the world of all non-plant-based life. Like true heroes, the Kotati just want to help the world. So that's the start of Empire. The rest of it is kind of this two-front battle. There's a battle happening on Earth, with the Kotati are trying to get to the vibranium-enriched soil in Wakanda. So Black Panther, Sue Storm, eventually the Thing once he comes back to life, and several other Avengers are fighting off these plant-based Kotati creatures, keeping them from the soil. At the same time, in space, Captain Marvel, Johnny Storm, and Hulkling are trying to figure out what to do with this Kree-Skrull armada. They have access to this weapon called the Pyre, which explodes a sun to wipe out a universe or galaxy to protect the rest of what's out there. Seems like a bad idea for Earth, so hopefully they are able to stop the Pyre from exploding or stop it from even being used. Spoiler alert, they don't completely stop it from being used. There were a couple scenes that we really wanted to talk about, and one is there's a lot of scenes with Tony and Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four just talking about, hey, how are we going to solve this problem? What are we going to do? We're thinkers. We got to think of something. Tony makes lots of jokes about how he thinks best in suits, and he builds Mr. Fantastic a suit. And we wanted to talk about that a little bit. There's this one really epic scene. So eventually somewhere in this space conflict, someone in the Kree-Skrull fleet, a betrayer will say, sets off the Pyre. They start to ignite it. So they're getting ready to ignite our Earth's sun. So hopefully the heroes can stop it. Otherwise, you're not going to get to hear this podcast because we'll all be dead. And this gets communicated to Reed and Tony, and they're just sitting around still doing this thinking. It's been like 3 issues of them just thinking, and we're like, what is going to happen? Are they ever going to get in the battle? And Reed and Tony come to this conclusion, and they're like, all right, the universe is going to end 2 ways in the next 9 minutes. One, the Kotati are going to get to this vibranium-enriched soil. Black Panther's army just fell. We've got to go solve that problem before they create this Death Blossom that blows up all life in the universe. But at the same time, our sun is exploding, and we've also got to stop that problem. But there's 2 of us, and we're 2 super geniuses, and there's 2 problems. So let's divide and conquer. We'll each take 1 problem, handle it separately. And that's when they unveil the Iron Man Mr. Fantastic suit. So it's a suit for Reed to wear that, like, accommodates all his crazy stretching and stuff. You wanted to talk about all his crazy stretching, right?
Yeah, that's one of the panels that I really wanted to talk about. I'm so excited about it. So Reed gets an Iron Man suit, and that's, first of all, that's awesome because it's built to keep in, to keep his, you know, his powers working through it so he can stretch out. The power suit that's built is basically a giant sound system. So they strap a bunch of speakers to Reed and they send him to Wakanda at light speed, and he just like drops bass on people and that's it, which is awesome, right? But most importantly, so the most important thing out of all of this is Reed stretches his arms to like envelop people in sound, specifically Sequoia. But he stretches for a reason. And that's super important. And that's probably like a weird sentence for people who aren't familiar. But when you start to look at a lot of Fantastic Four stuff, Reed Richards will stretch for no reason, and it's my biggest pet peeve in Marvel Comics. He will stretch his arm out to tickle his child. He will stretch his arm out to point at something. He will stretch his neck out to look to the left. And it's silly, but I was so excited in a major Marvel event to see Mr. Fantastic stretch for a good reason.
So he's not just stretching for stretching's sake this time.
Yeah. We could do a whole episode and I could just run off about Reed stretching for no reason and what I think about it and like everything. Because it's seriously like, you can ask any of my friends, I'll randomly send them panels that'll just say why in all caps. and it'll have him twisting his arms around like a bassinet to tickle the child. And I don't know why he did it. Or he points off screen and he has to loop his arm around itself to point, which just seems dangerous. Honestly, like, I have a whole list of reasons. Like I said, it could be an entire episode, but this Empire stretching was perfect. And I'm so excited about it. Like, it honestly should be my background for, like, my laptop and my computer, or my phone and everything, just because I was so excited.
I'm expecting, like, a Marvel Champions stretchy card now, like the folding cards for Ant-Man. There'll be a stretching card that stretches for no reason. There'll be no mechanical purpose to it. It'll just exist.
It'll have his hero card, and it splits into two cards when you pull it apart, and his arms are, like, stretched out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll happen, honestly.
So while Reeves using his super stretchy suit, Iron Man has to stop the sun or pyre from exploding.
The pyre hadn't erupted yet. They had nine...
Like, it's getting ready to explode.
Yeah, they had 9 minutes.
So he puts the sun in a suit, and he uses Mr. Fantastic's unstable molecules to solve that problem, and they stop the sun from exploding.
Yeah, that's where Captain Marvel and Johnny show up to the sun and try to absorb the weapon shooting the sun.
Something about iron and density, science mumbo-jumbo, black magic.
Right, and using iron because it's dense. I remember that panel as well.
But the sun doesn't explode. We can all rejoice. We're all here to listen to this podcast. I know that's what you were worried about. You're welcome. Tony saved us all. Way to go, Iron Man.
That's it. Yeah, it actually happened. These are documentaries.
And at the end, the Kotati surrender. Avengers and Fantastic Four win, and long live the king. Hulkling is still king of space. And, well, that's Empire. Great storyline, great character moments, lots of progress and characters put into different places to set up the next phase of the Marvel Universe. This story really gets me. I'm one of those big suckers. I love these giant crossover events. Like, I know there are a lot of fluff, and there's a lot of extraneous stuff that doesn't need to happen, and it just happens for shock value. But for some reason, I love the giant crossover events. So this is for me.
I'm actually on the other side of the spectrum, typically. I really like the subtle, long game titles. I'm a huge fan of Ed Brubaker, and having to read an entire year to get some satisfaction from something big revealed. Winter Soldier is a good example of that. His Daredevil run is a good example of that. It takes a long time, and there's a lot of human element to it. The space stuff is something that I typically avoided, but Empire promised me Fantastic Four, and that's my exception, so I jumped in. Yeah.
And with these comics, there's always a ton of crossovers. So this one had crossovers in X-Men, Fantastic Four, Avengers, Captain America, kind of all over the place. There were a couple one-shots. And there were a bunch that were canceled, I think, just maybe a few.
There was 21 canceled tie-ins.
Oh, wow. I didn't know there were that many. Yeah, the Thor one was really awkward because he's in like the first three issues of the main series, and then he disappears and he goes on some mythic quest. And then he reappears at the end with new, like, green lightning Gaia-inspired powers that aren't explained. I'm assuming that would have happened in his crossover tie-in, but maybe we'll get that someday?
I expect that, yeah, because it mentions his mother Gaia, right? And how they're not worthy of her power. So I expect that's exactly what the tie-in was about. And we just don't get it. I mean, maybe we'll get it later as a digital release, but yeah. Because I don't know, like, I feel like they're drafted up and they just didn't want to print them. I mean, I have no insight, obviously, but
what I'm hearing is, as an insider, you know everything.
So go ahead and address all of your emails to me at addercop@mcm. Okay to print.
Well, that's our main topic for today. We're going to talk about Empire tie-ins. So why don't you tell us about what story you were going to talk about?
So yeah, I picked up Captain America, which is not written by the current creative team for Captain America, but by somebody who has written him in the past. Philip K. Johnson, also an artist, Ariel Olivetti. And if you're familiar with any of the Marvel games, previous Marvel tabletop games, specifically Versus System, you've seen a lot of Olivetti's art. And it's really cool art. Like, it's not as embellished as her or as his covers are, and it's consistently good. Like, there's nothing there's nothing that looks funky, whether it's the giant plant monsters or the U.S. soldiers that are in it, because, you know, it wouldn't be a Captain America Crisis book without U.S. soldiers in it. The short version, the summarized version of it is there is a crisis in Mexico where the Cotati are raising what is functionally a giant compost monster the size of, like, Godzilla. And it's controlled by a plant wizard who is sitting on his shoulder and directing him. While this is going on, the Cotati are using their spores to take control of U.S. officials and soldiers to infiltrate, but are pretty quickly found out, typically. As it is, it's only a three-part, so obviously they can't embed anything too far as plot points go. But honestly, if you've never read Captain America before and you pick up this three-part, you would get everything that you would expect, including him riding in a Jeep, throwing his shield at people while soldiers fire into masses of things. I don't know how he got his shield back like that, but he's Cap, so that's the way it works. Yeah, magic. He is instructing some soldiers. He is defying some orders based on the good of the people. And everybody is excited to be in a position compared to the Howling Commandos of World War II. And that honestly summarizes the first issue as a whole, is him showing up, defying orders, and then getting in a Jeep and shooting a bunch of plant monsters on the way to Mexico.
Plant monsters is a big thing in this series, is what I'm noticing.
And plant monsters are a big thing in this series as their kaiju size. The second issue is full of a bunch of shots that you'd associate with Captain America. Him, honestly, like, body slamming people and looking like he's stage diving into a fight. Because obviously he's completely invincible all the time, forever. And let me see, just flipping through two here. Yeah, no, it's like I said, it's exactly what you'd expect from a Cap series. Like, it doesn't pay any heed to the things that happened in Secret Empire. He's not in a position where nobody trusts him. If you're following the main series, or if you know anything about the main series right now, that's a major point, is that people still don't trust him. And here, everybody trusts him, because it's a crisis. You have to. There's a bunch of great full-page spreads of the plants erupting, flamethrowers being used, just things being destroyed, you know. And
so how does it conclude? They go to Mexico City and stop the plant Goliath, or the plant Goliath still roams?
They get to Mexico City, and the plant Goliath is getting ready to wipe Mexico City off of Earth, along with everybody in it. And that's when people notice that he has a little plant wizard on his shoulder with a fancy magic staff. And in natural Cap fashion, he notices this and he devises a plan, which is to punch the wizard in the face. So he climbs the giant monster and takes away his staff, much like Gandalf and Saruman. And that's it. I mean, he really just beats up a wizard and they lose control of their giant compost kaiju. And you know, that's it. Like, he flipping through it again, there's an excellent panel where the plant wizard is wearing just enough cloth for Cap to grab him by the collar and, like, shake him, you know, like,
awesome.
So, lesson learned, no capes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're Taskmaster.
Yeah.
So how would you turn this into a Marvel Champions scenario?
Oh, man.
That's the real question.
Are we allowed to talk about Rise of the Red Skull?
Sure, why not? It's been out.
Okay, so honestly, the first thing that came to mind is similar to The Sleeper Awakens, where you get this massive monster put into play that you have to deal with. And it would be, you know, multiple stage, because those are all the best ones. And in one stage, you can't do anything to him. You really just have to let him attack, and you have to deal with it somehow, until you get to a certain point, which is you realizing how you damage him. So maybe card one represents the monster being on the board and you just having to work around him. And side two says you can finally deal damage to him and you can't win until he's removed.
Gotta get rid of the wizard first.
Got to get rid of the wizard first.
Well, that's fascinating. I've only read the first two. The third one is supposed to come in. I had to get like an extra copy of it this week. So they sold out. So it must have been good. The X-Men Empire tie-in has a lot of similar themes, I'm going to say, to like Wizard on the Soldiers and Magic Staff. And if you haven't read X-Men in a while, it's a completely different world now. Like, the X-Men have been rebirthed. They've escaped mortality. So, and when an X-Men dies, they can basically just bring it back to life anew with all its memories and all its skills and all its experience. And they have their own nation, and they travel through these portals that open in plants to go between their nation, Krakoa, and other places. So it's really interesting. There's two tie-in issues that aren't part of this four-issue miniseries because the X-Men have a base on the moon, which is where all that Avengers action happened.
Oh, that's why it's explained that the X-Men aren't there to respond, right? Because their portals are plant-based?
Yeah, their portals are plant-based. So they're worried. Everybody's worried about these plant monsters being able to control these portals that let them go anywhere in the world now. So it's a four-issue series. The first issue starts out with nothing to do with the X-Men. It's Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch talking. So Scarlet Witch is really upset about M-Day when she killed a bunch of mutants and brought them back and did all sorts of things to them in the past. And she feels guilt over it. So she tried to resurrect the, I think it's like 18 million mutants that were on Genosha at one point, about a year ago.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm just going to bring them back to life. Then I won't have to feel so guilty. But being typical Scarlet Witch, she messes the spell up and she brings them all back as zombies. So she's real sad about it. And she's complaining to Doctor Strange saying, we got to figure out a way to fix this. And then it concludes the introduction. You cut to Genosha and you see a supreme plant sorcerer scientist. And he is trying to figure out a way to get into the mutant portal in Genosha so that they can teleport to the Vibranium Mound in the main series. And this zombie approaches him. This zombie is the mutant zombie of Explodey Boy. That is his name. This comic is written very humorously. It's actually all four issues are written by a different X-Men writer. So the first one is by Hickman. The second one is by Duggan. Third one is by Wells and some other people, and then it goes back to Hickman. So they kind of go all over, but it's one continual story. So Explodey Boy the zombie is talking with the plant supreme scientist, and he explodes. He blows him up because that's what he does. So he still has his mutant powers even as a mutant zombie. So the zombies and the plant people go to war. No mutants yet. No mutant X-Men have occurred yet, but they're fighting in front of this portal. And then you get the title page for the four-issue crossover. And it says plants versus zombies. And then in parentheses, it says alien plants versus mutant zombies. So I got that far and I knew this was going to be good.
That's a really good lineup too. Gary Duggan is an awesome writer. He had a great run on Deadpool. I've met him. We talked and ran into each other inadvertently in Las Vegas, where he reminded us not to tell people the nickname that we suggested for him at his table. So I won't go into it here so that it doesn't become a problem, but I'd be happy to tell you off mic.
All right, we're done editing that part out. So it cuts back to the X-Men, and it's Angel, Magic, and Monet slash Peasant or Penance, and they're eating salad at a table, ironically. They're eating plants. I thought that was funny. And Monet and Angel are getting ready to meet with some pharmaceutical company because through the plants these X-Men have, they can cure all diseases if they want. They can cure cancer. They can cure whatever somebody wants. And they're trying to start a business so that they can seem like good guys because the world still kind of hates mutants. Like, it always happens. Magic is there actually to, like, she says she's there as security, and then she reveals that she's there to check in on them for the professor. So they get mad and they decide to teleport back to Krakoa and argue with the professor about it. Professor Xavier basically tells them, well, I'm not asking her to spy on you. I'm asking her to make sure you're even needed there because there's only so many mutants and we need our best ones in the best spots. Some warning siren goes off about the Genosha portal where these mutant zombies and alien plants are having a battle. They don't know what's going on there other than the portal's not working. So Magic, Angel, and Monet decide they're going to teleport there and try to see what's going on. Magneto, who's now a good guy mutant, tells them, you can take one other citizen of Krakoa. We can't afford more people than that. And they complain. They're like, we could be walking into a war zone. We don't even know what's going on. So he said, I made myself clear. You can pick one mutant. So they pick Multiple Man because he can multiply into like thousands of mutants.
Can I wish for more wishes? No.
So they teleport there and they get up to this cliff and they say, whoa, there's plant people. It looks like they're running towards us. And then they say, wait, they're running away from something towards us. And then they say, wait, they're running away from zombies towards us. Terrifying, right? So they take their battle stance and they're like, all right, we're going to stop whatever's going on here because we need to fix the portal. There's lots of funny jokes with the Multiple Man. Like, he finds the portal and it's covered with these Kotati plants. And he says, I think I found the problem. No one's been pulling our weeds. So he's trying to pull the weeds off the portal. Magic says she's just going to cut the portal in half. And Angel says, no, then the portal will be completely unoperational. Multiple Man says, I know what you need. 60 unskilled workers with hands and nothing better to do. So he multiplies himself and starts de-weeding the portal.
Fantastic.
All these zombies and plants start swarming them. They're getting overwhelmed. All of a sudden, all the zombies and plants that are near them explode and they get covered in green goo. They have no idea what has caused it. And you panel away to another team of super heroines that has only existed for one comic before this crossover. And they are, let me find their name here, Horticulture. And it is a team of four old lady biologists, scientists. And when I say old lady, I'm talking like one of them is in a wheelchair, all in their 60s and 70s with, you know, oxygen breathing machines. And apparently they are biologists that want to take samples from these Kotati so that they can help stop them from invading Earth. So the final page is a redo of the title page. And now it says, alien plants versus mutant zombies versus old ladies. Enough said. It's the end of issue one. Beautiful. Right?
I don't think Nuff Said is used often enough. I think we need to go back to using Nuff Said all the time.
I use Nuff Said all the time and nobody knows what it is and it makes me sad.
That sucks. I just learned that there was an event called Nuff Said.
Really?
Yeah, there was an event called Nuff Said where for a month a bunch of major Marvel titles came out with issues that had no text in them at all. So it's the opposite of what you'd expect.
Oh, it's just words. Just images. That's perfect. Images.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the Nuff Said event. And honestly, it's, you know, it's 2020. Those came out around the year 2001. Around 2001. Yeah. And I think it's been long enough that we need to bring Nuff Said back.
We need Nuff Said again. I would watch that. I'd read that, I guess.
Let's work it back into normal circulation, honestly.
That could be an awesome Marvel Champions card. Nuff Said, and then no text at the bottom. You just. So anyway, issue two goes on. So now we got the old ladies here, Horticulture. They kind of team up with the X-Men, but they're kind of butting heads because they also want to sample the X-Men's mutant flower. They use pheromones on Angel and Multiple Man, and it's really funny because you see what Angel and Multiple Man see the old ladies as, right? And it's a bunch of teenage femme fatales, but in reality, they're these really old ladies. So they're like constantly trying to please them in every way possible and do their bidding. You can imagine Magic and Monet are extremely disgusted and irritated by this. They go on to continue fighting with the zombies and the plant people, and they decide to call a truce with the old ladies of Horticulture. At one point, the portal does get enveloped by a Kotati-like seed death blossom bulb. So Black Tom is no longer able to communicate with them, to communicate what's going on to the leaders of the mutant nation. And this is where I said there's a common theme. I guess there was some like branches that got like stuck in Angel's uniform, some like dust particles. So Black Tom is able to conjure a little version of himself. Imagine like a little devil sitting on your shoulder. It's a little like wooden Black Tom on Angel's shoulder for like the shoulder for the entire three issues, just like doing witty one-liners about how he's not doing good enough. And why is he hitting on old ladies, apparently?
It makes me really happy that Black Tom was included in the X-Men stuff. I haven't seen him in years.
Oh, he's really good in this. It's pretty funny. The old ladies keep teasing Magic, and she throws them in limbo for 5 minutes so they can learn what it's like to be there. It says, I'll bring you back out once you agree to actually be helpful. And then she fixes the portal to Genosha, or to the, not Genosha, to Krakoa. And tells the mutants, I don't know why she wants the psychic mutants, but she says, I want all available psychic mutants to come to the Genosian portal and help us out. And there's a cool panel that has like Selene and Lady Mastermind and Sinister and the Shadow King and Exodus and the Stepford Cuckoos. Like every psychic character you have ever seen shows up to go to the battle. End of issue two.
It has Selene in it?
It has Celine in it.
So Celine in the main Cap title right now just received a beating from Sharon Carter in the Iron Patriot armor.
Really?
So it's implied, like, while Empire's going on, Celine has this like little town in the Midwest where she's giving guys hope and giving them jobs and stuff, and really she's feeding on them. So for the last like 6 months, maybe not 6 months max, in Captain America, she's been running this town. So how did she have time to go to space?
I mean, she can teleport wherever she wants. She's a mutant.
I guess
I don't know. It looks like Celine. I can't guarantee that it's Celine. They never say her name, but
I mean, she looks like a vampire, right?
Looks like a vampire wearing a black dress, right? Long black hair.
Story checks out. Like, it's got to be her.
So issue 3 is crazy. All the mutants are there. Quentin summons some like psychic AK-47s and starts shooting up plant zombies, because why not?
As he does.
Yeah, a couple people get stuck in the plant blossom. Multiple Man and Monet and some of the old ladies. One of the old ladies teams up with Beast to make a potion that can get rid of the plants, because none of their other weapons are working. And Explodey Boy comes back. The mutant zombie Explodey Boy is also in the plant blossom. He strikes a deal with Multiple Man. He says, "Hey, I just want to be a good guy again. Can I give you some help?" And they said, "Sure. What do you need to give back to us?" And he says, "Trust me, you'll give me all I need." And there's a giant 2-page panel. It just says kaboom, and it's Explodey Boy's zombie exploding. He explodes them out of the Death Blossom, and then it gets revealed later that he blew up like thousands of Multiple Men, and now he's eating their body parts, because
that's
infinite
awesome
food for all zombies.
I'm gonna leave this podcast right now and go buy it. Actually,
go buy and read this. Right, it just sounds ridiculous. When he explodes, a bunch of twigs go shooting everywhere, and the X-Men finds a magical staff. So another magic staff, just like the one the Wizard had in Captain America, she grabs it and she turns into a complete demon, like a real demon, like red skin, scary wings, and everything. And she decides that she can control all the zombies, and all the zombies start listening to her. They summon a giant, the Kotati summon a giant fusion of zombie plant technology. So there's a giant zombie plant, not a giant Godzilla plant, but a zombie plant that is now marching around Genosha, just picking up mutants, old ladies, and zombies, and plants, throwing them wherever it wants. That's the end of issue 3. It's great. We haven't even gotten to the peak of this story yet.
This is amazing. Like, this blows the Captain America series out of the water. Like, as much as I love climbing a kaiju and punching out the wizard pilot, this is amazing.
It goes back to Scarlet Witch and Doctor Strange talking about how she tried to resurrect all these bodies a year ago and they need to solve it. And they cast some spell on a staff of like the Tree of Life from the world, and it's supposed to last for 30 days. And after the 30 days are up, the zombies will go away. But apparently they only use it for like 28 of the days. So when magic picks up the staff, it's going to last 2 more days and the zombies should go away. So you find that out at the beginning. But there's still this giant mutant zombie going around. Since all the mutants have escaped immortality, they've actually resurrected Explodey Boy. And he's like a youth living in the X-Men nation. So Beast recruits him and says, "Hey, I need you to go talk to Zombie Explodey Boy. Get him to work with us and we can end this thing. Here's this biological weapon. We need to shoot it into their Death Blossom. End it once and for all." So Explodey Boy super adorably agrees to do that. There's like a good 10 pages of him, Explodey Boy, sitting next to his zombie self just at the edge of a cliff, recapping his life. So I'm just going to read some of my favorite lines. So he lands next to Zombie Explodey Boy and says, "Hey, how's it going?" And Zombie Boy goes, "Hey, it's like I'm looking in the mirror. This is kind of strange." But they obviously don't look alike at all, because one of them is like decomposed, but he doesn't know it because he doesn't have a mirror to look into. He recaps everything that's been happening in the X-Men comics, how they've escaped mortality and they're curing all these diseases. And they have this really endearing moment where Zombie Boy asks Explodey Boy, like, "Hey, well, how's life going? Are you doing okay?" And he says, "I'm doing great. I'm actually talking to my parents again. Even though I'm a mutant and they hate me, they've like decided that I can be a part of their family. I cured dad's arthritis using this X-Men thing that Professor X gave me. Like, life's going pretty swell. They're really taking care of me." And the zombie's like tearing up that his real self is like living a good life now. At one point, Explodey Boy has to explain to Zombie Boy that he's really dead. Like, he's not going to come back. Like, the zombie version of him is dead. He says, "But I don't feel dead." And Exploity Boy says, that's the spirit. Live the lie. So they're sitting there. I mean, this is like half the comic is they're just sitting there talking to each other. Here's my favorite page. Explody Boy tells Zombie Boy, hey, guess what? We had our first kiss. Zombie has a bewildered expression, and he says, really? Really? Who was it? That's the amazing part. You know that girl with the mutant powers to smell like spiders? And he goes, shut up. You did not kiss her. I know. She's way out of our league. Well, how was it? Okay. In one word, it was amazing. Totally amazing. So we're dating now. Well, no, it turns out that Exploity Boy or we don't like spiders anymore. It's just like five panels of like character-driven story between a character and a zombie version of himself. So at the end, the zombie guy goes, well, if I've only got one day to live, I'm not going down like this. Give me that jetpack. He puts a jetpack on with the bioweapon. He literally jettisons himself into the mutant plant zombie's mouth and explodes it. And everyone gets covered in green goo. There's like 3 to 4 more pages of Magic, who's still a demon for 2 to 3 days, telling people that she owns them and they have to do her bidding and all sorts of horrible things. And then she reverts back to normal size and says, well, that was really awkward.
So I pulled up the Marvel fandom page for Explody Boy. And it was like right on cue when you talked about him strapping the jetpack on. I think their picture is him with the jetpack on smiling at everybody before he goes in. Whether or not it's from that one, it looks like perfect as to what you were describing, but it may be from that panel.
Explody Boy has only appeared in this 4-issue crossover, so it's got to be from somewhere in here.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so it's got his zombie version of himself and then his version of himself before he jettisons into the mouth of the monster.
It's just amazing. I've never felt so attached to a character that I didn't know before.
And now here we are. So if you were to turn Explody Boy into, let's say, an ally card, right?
Mm-hmm.
How would it work?
Well, it depends if it's the zombie version or the boy version. So it seems like Explody Boy just explodes and somehow lives through it. Like, that's his mutant power. So he'd probably be some kind of, maybe he would have like 0 attack and 0 thwart. And you'd be like, why would I want this ally? But he'd have an action to deal damage to himself, to damage everything on the board or something like that, right? Explode like one that. Too many times and you're gone. If it was the zombie version, maybe he'd have to come in from your discard pile somehow. That would be cool.
He can only be played from the discard.
Oh, yeah. Only played from the discard. That'd actually be really interesting because you use him as a resource and then you use him as another resource on the field.
Right. Yeah, that sounds really good.
So I'm all for Jonathan Hickman writing Explody Boy, the spinoff series. I'm I'm very much into it.
Yeah, I haven't even read it and I'm sold on the character.
You're going to go buy it now. I can tell.
I'm going to be reading it for sure.
All right. Well, that was 2 Empire tie-ins. There's a bunch of other ones. I didn't get the Avengers one. I did get the one-shots and some things like that. They're all fairly self-contained. Like, that story fits into the overall arching story. But I think in the main Empire line, they mention in one panel, they're like, oh, yeah, the X-Men handled that Death Blossom in Genosha, so we don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a one-line throwaway thing that leads to this whole awesome character-driven story. It's very humor-driven. So if you like humorous comics, this is one to read.
This is coming from the Deadpool writer who pitted Deadpool against the ghosts of former presidents.
Yes, I have read that one. It's a good
one. And that's my first recommendation for Deadpool for anybody that wants to get into him.
Well, we'll have to talk. Are you reading the current Deadpool?
No, I'm actually not a huge Deadpool fan, but
I'm not either, but I decided to read the current one because I heard it was pretty good. And Deadpool is currently king of Monster Island. Like,
damn it. All right, now I gotta buy it.
Yeah, I know. He's king of Monster Island, and I think he's gonna be getting with Elsa Bloodstone because she's like queen of the monsters right now. So it's
Marvel Monsters is a definite weak spot. It goes along with the Howard the Duck stuff.
Yeah.
He gets lumped in there a lot. So yeah.
Brutal. Well, so what do you think about Empire? Do you think that ever has a chance to be a Marvel Champions box set?
That's actually a really good question. I don't know what the delay is on product for them, but I could see it being a scenario pack rather than like a deluxe box.
That could be cool.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy as a scenario pack. And if they start doing events like that, I think it's a really good idea. Because, I don't know, I feel like there's only so many villains that you can do a whole scenario pack around without directing it somewhere. So in this case, if they want to do Skrulls and they want to introduce the Kree, I think that Empire is the way to go for it.
Yeah, and I could totally see some sort of scenario where there's two competing things that you have to balance, like keeping down, right? If there were two main schemes and they both got threat, one was the exploding pyre and one was people getting to the vibranium mound, you'd have this like tension of where do I focus my efforts? That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe like something else where you decide who you're helping this turn, either the Krees or the Skrulls. And I know it's not exactly like that, but in terms of game mechanics,
be a good theme. Yeah,
yeah.
Caleb, if you're listening, feel free to use all these ideas.
We have free time right now. We're stuck at home.
Precisely. Someone on the custom Discord will make it happen, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. Especially because, you know, we could say, oh, well, why don't they go back to the original Kree-Skrull War and balance that? But they've shown that Marvel Champions wants to stay within the last, I don't know, 15 years of comics. And this being probably the most relevant Kree-Skrull involvement in that time, I think that it's a higher probability than you'd expect. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that.
Well, that was our first issue of Not Enough Said. We came up with the title of this spinoff while recording, so hopefully it sticks. Hope you guys enjoyed this, and join us next time when we talk about the villains from The Rise of Red Skull Box.